that is such disappointment. Sonoda pulls off before we'd even taken the lights, and surely we will have to send them round again.
Failure, Yuki, failure.
Copy.
This is on board with Yuki Tsunoda. That is the sound of your Grand Prix ending before you'd even formed up on the grid. Here come the five red lights in Monza. And the Italian Grand Prix is go! With a good reaction time for one Ferrari. Make that two Ferraris. Max Verstappen is breaking out of the slipstream. He's going to contend with Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz down to turn one. Sainz is first, then it's Verstappen, then George Russell is on the inside. But Charles Leclerc has the power to hang on to third position as they all make it through the first chicane. Sainz holds the lead.
Brilliant start, brilliant defence, and Charles Leclerc there still having to battle with George Russell as they go down to the second chicane. Looks like he's going to maintain that position. The door is a little bit open for Perez to have a look, but amazingly they seem to have got through the first couple of chicanes with no sign of any contact.
Alexander Albon, who's trying to use that incredible straight line speed of the Williams to clear the slightly draggier McLaren ahead, and he's got a good run, DC.
He has indeed. He pulled a slightly different line off the first chicane. He's going to be forced to the outside in the braking zone for the bridge. This would be remarkable if he pulls it off.
We go on board with Alex Albon, who gets up to sixth position with a super move.
That was brave. It was precise. Absolutely brilliant from Alex.
Now there's a run for Max.
Yeah, loses out through the middle of the corner inevitably, as you've then got the turbulent air off the back of Sainz. Well, he's going to have DRS. He'll start to gain massively in this phase. Is he brave enough to have a go?
He's going to be sent the long way round by Carlos Sainz, who is desperate to hang on to the lead of the Grand Prix, and that is an elbow thrown by the Ferrari. Would Sainz be aggressive was the question. There's your answer.
Max there slightly compromised the braking. Sainz left enough room for him to try and wiggle his way around the outside, but he wasn't carrying the momentum. Carlos is going defensive again. That's taking away any confidence for Max to lunge it.
Perez gets to the inside of Russell, but they were both off the road trying to make the corner at the first chicane. And Perez will be arguing, well, we both went off. Russell will say he overtook me off the racetrack.
He pushed me off.
Okay, so more aggressive on the braking this time. Goes to turn... Well, okay. Checo, good. Good attempt to get the referee on side, but you were never making the apex.
And Verstappen, who forced a defensive move from Carlos Sainz one lap ago. Carlos Sainz having a look in the mirror. Verstappen getting close, and he just immediately commits to the racing line. There's the first luck up we have seen from the race leader. That, a visual example of the pressure that he's under. And look at the momentum that Verstappen has got coming out of the first chicane, going through Curva Grande. Side by side they run for the lead of the Grand Prix, and the Ferrari is inching back ahead. Centimetres between the leading pair in the Italian Grand Prix, and Max Verstappen takes the lead on the day that he chases history. He gets past the Ferrari. Sainz fights back, but there's nothing he can do, and the man who's chasing a perfect 10 is P1.
Yeah, deployed nice and early, the electrical energy available coming off the first chicane. Then you can see the slippery Ferrari starts to outperform him as the speed builds, but in the end he had the inside line.
One lap later, and as other... Whoa! This time, Perez gets to the part of the racetrack he's been chasing for so long. He gets to the inside. That's fourth place. Lando Norris is going to get past, and the undercut effective there. There is... Oh, he's going to throw one to the inside. It was tight. It's contact between the McLarens at Monza. But it was Norris who got by.
We're going to see Lando Norris on the outside. Lando leaves him space, and then you can see that contact of the tires
as they go past the iconic timing tower on the left hand side, the old grandstand in the middle, and then the next iconic timing tower with the Red Bull out of the slipstream, building up to 200 miles an hour and taking third place in the Grand Prix. Leclerc was thinking about the late lunch, wasn't able to do so, but one Ferrari slips off the podium. On board with Lewis Hamilton, a five-time winner of this Grand Prix, just trying to improve up to eighth place. Does he have the room? The answer's no. There's a lock-up. They're both over the road. And the story continues down to the Lesmos.
Hamilton will say, well, look, he pushed me off and he never made the corner.
Hamilton against Piastri, flat to the floor as we go through Curva Grande. He's looking for that inside line. Piastri gives him the squeeze, but you've got to give a car's length. Contact! He's made contact off the road. They both go. And damage for Oscar Piastri. Hamilton takes the place off the road. Another dramatic moment for Oscar Piastri's Grand Prix.
If anyone has to apportion blame, I would say Lewis needed to give him a bit more space, which Carlos Sainz is not giving Checo Perez.
Perez is going to risk the nose to the inside, and he bails out of the first chicane. And Sainz gets back to second place. Perez had to give him the position back, but this is getting tighter and tighter and tighter every time they go into the braking zone of the Retafilo. Hamilton now, with that five-second penalty hanging over him, cleared one McLaren. And now trying to clear the other one around the outside for Lewis Hamilton, who gets past Lando Norris. Best run he's had so far for second place. Oh, he thought about it, and Sainz went tight to the wall. Perez has got the DRS. Perez has got the place. At last, Sergio Perez slows the Red Bull down, and by the time he leaves the first chicane, he's up to second place in the Grand Prix. This is so close between the two Scarlet Ferraris who go onto the main straight. Charles Leclerc has got enormous momentum here. They're side by side at Monza, and Charles Leclerc is moving ahead. He's got the inside line. Charles Leclerc takes third place in the Italian Grand Prix, but he's locked up to give another opportunity to Sainz, who cranks on the steering wheel, looking for the line. The mic in the chance. How did he not make contact with his teammate there?
I feel that I've just seen a ghost car. You know, the wheels, they must have been so close to touching.
Sainz has the inside line. Will he have the position? Lock up. Oh, they nearly made contact again. This is really aggressive stuff from the two teammates. As we check in on another move, this time for Lewis Hamilton. And see, it is possible to overtake a Williams in a straight line. He went the long way round at turn one.
Until the end, no risk.
Is there a late lunge? There was! And he very nearly went into the back of his teammate. If that's Charles Leclerc's idea of no risk, my word, it will be third for Carlos Sainz. That is the last real opportunity in the Italian Grand Prix for Leclerc to get past his teammate. We are witnessing something that no one has ever seen in the entire history of Formula One. A landmark for Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen wins 10 Grand Prix in a row to take the all-time record. And the Ferraris are scrapping all the way to the line. Unbelievable stuff. Perez is second, and it was 1/10 of a second between third and fourth.
This is the Outlap F1 Podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome into Season 5. This is episode number 28 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. It's our 2023 Italian GP race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with my wonderful co-host who's been with me with the Iron Man streak so far, my buddy Cody. Cody, it's good to see you, sir. I hope you had a good Labor Day weekend. It's kind of back to work for all of us in the U.S. today, but how's it been?
Yeah, it was a blast. I got really sunburned over the weekend. I went and fished with my sister and nephew yesterday, and stood in the same spot facing the same way for hours and realized the whole right side of my body is very sunburned.
Oh dear. Well, quick healing and aloe vera would be my advice on that. Mm-hmm. I've been there. I've done that. I got sunburned once at an Aaron Water show in Chicago. And that cures you of it when you have to go through like a month and a half of trying to get better from it. Yeah, it was probably really bad. I will not ever have that happen to me again. I carry with me the SPF 100 stuff basically wherever I go now. And we just deal with it that way. But anyway, that's not why you're all here. You're here to hear us talk about the Italian GP. And if you found us, welcome along. You can find our show, as always, on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast. See our link tree in our show notes. If you happen to be watching this on YouTube and you like and enjoy what you're hearing and seeing, do us a favor. Click the like and subscribe button. It just helps our content get to you that much quicker. If you're on your favorite podcasting app and you happen to like what you're hearing, Number one, thank you. We appreciate it. And then if you'd like to, you can click the 5-star button on those. Again, it just helps us come up a little bit better in search results and helps us get our, like I said, our content to you that much better. You can email the show, as always, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. You can check out the website, www.outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. As always, we are eternally grateful for our monetary supporters, including Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and, of course, Jonathan Scott. Thank you so much for helping to support the show. If you'd like to become a member and help support the show, you can check out our anchor page, $1, $5. It all goes into making the show better and moving it forward. You can also check out the good folks at Manscaped and take advantage of our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP. Get 20% off and free shipping with the products that are on that site, if you are so inclined. And our final sponsor, the F1Guy.com, our buddy Vincenzo Landino, big time Ferrari guy. He was probably very happy this weekend with the overall result, better than what it's been for the Scuderia. He's got some good stuff. It's F1 quality merch at not necessarily the F1 quality price. So go ahead and check that out. He's got some cool stuff if you would like to do that. All right. So before we head into our headline and actually get into the race, because we're actually recording it a little bit later than we normally do, we do have some news that broke out. Big time story overall with the health of the sport. But the FIA today certified all 10 teams are officially under the cost cap for the 2022 season. So there will be no further investigations or actions taken by the FIA with respect to the 2022 books, which means that they can be closed. If you were one of those teams that maybe you had to give a little more proof to the FIA, but it looks like whatever they, it looks like they've been able to work it out, and we have no violations this season, at least from 2022. So I think that's a great thing. Cody, what's your thought?
I think it's great that we don't have to listen to the rumors anymore about this team broke the cost cap, this team did that. We're probably still going to hear forever that is because Red Bull minorly broke the cost cap in 2021. We're going to hear it forever about how, oh, well, they already got their advantage starting in 2021, and that advantage is carried through all the other seasons up until now. So I'm sure we're still going to hear some of that, but at least we don't have to hear it immediately right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at least they all get a, like I said, a clean bill of health for 2022. So that's a good thing. And it just gives more credibility, I think, overall for the championship, you know, we had last year. And if you actually read the actual violation and you go through that, and look, I do accounting for a living, I understand how things can get placed in the wrong bucket. I don't see active rule breaking by Red Bull. Were they over? Yes. Did they count some things in a way that they would have thought wasn't going to be in the cost cap, but the FIA said, oh, nope, that's part of the cost cap? Yeah. Is it all the catering? No. But a lot of it is sunk money that they had to pay for people who were on gardening leave that are now on other teams, and those services are already being rendered on their new team. So, I mean, that was, I think, by far the biggest chunk of it. And that doesn't necessarily go into a racing car or car development. So, you know, if there was that, I would have been the first one to jump on them and say, look, you know, this is not right. They got to be punished. They got to be punished more severely. I think they got what they deserved. It was an error. It was a fixable error. They obviously fixed it because we've seen other teams have people go on gardening leave. And it looks like everybody's, like I said, now that we've gotten the clean bill of health, hopefully we can start to move on. Hopefully this doesn't become as big of a story. Hopefully now the FIA knows what it is they're looking for. And we can get, you know, more the certification a little bit earlier in the season. It's earlier than last year by about a month or so. That's good. But it's still not great. I think they wanted to have it, you know, in May and June if they could have, you know, had their ideal timeline. But yeah, we're getting on it. But it's good that everybody is complying with it. And that, you know, I had initially said when the cost cap came in, it was going to take 5 years to really see it. This is year three. Now that we're going into, so we're getting there.
Yeah. The more years that go by with them having to apply the cost cap and scrutinize all the teams, I think the quicker we're going to get those results, because the FIA is going to get better at it. The teams are going to get better at reporting. Hopefully you'll have less instances of you know, additional scrutiny being needed. So I think by, you know, probably next year we'll see it around when the FIA says we should expect to see it.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. But that was a bit of, you know, super important news. We had talked about maybe some rumors that some teams might be over the cost cap, but doesn't look like we're going to have any of that. All right. Now, back to the Italian GP, which I thought was, believe it or not, pretty darn entertaining for a 73-minute race. There is a lot in here, believe it or not. We'll start with our headlines of the day. And, Cody, I will let you tackle it. What you got?
My headline is records are meant to be beaten. I tip my cap to Max Verstappen for breaking Vettel's record and reaching 10 wins in a row, double digits. It's quite amazing, no matter how you feel about him personally or about Red Bull's program or how good their car is. 10 wins is 10 wins, and it's never been done before. So, again, tip of the cap to him. And now we just get to see how unbreakable he's going to make this record.
Yeah, we are now going into, with every new round now, definite uncharted territory, where when they put the record up, it now says 2023-ongoing, because we still haven't gotten to the end of it. So yeah, we'll have to see how far this goes. My headline of the day kind of ruins the race result a little bit, but for 15 laps, we may have actually had the ultimate result in doubt. And then the Ferraris, who went all in, who I give them credit for whatever they did to the car to say, okay, this thing is just going to dominate in a straight line, which it did for the majority of the weekend. It looks like the all-in got called and got cashed in, and it just wasn't enough in the end. But we had the result in doubt for more than a few laps, even when the DRS came online, and that was, I think, the closest we'd been basically all season to somebody knocking off a Red Bull. So at least it was there. At least it was in doubt. But, you know, as I said before, Thanos is inevitable. And, you know, as soon as you saw it on the timing, I literally did one of these. Ah, that's the end of that. That was fun for a while. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Reset. And where am I going to focus now? But at least we had that, and that's good. You know, I mean, it probably made this race a lot more dramatic than we thought it was going to be, because I thought Max was just going to romp away and, you know, heck of what I know. So there we go. All right. So all the way back on the Saturday, we did have the qualifying going out in P20. He did not have a very good weekend. He had no time in the car on Friday, had limited time in the car on Saturday, and that proved to be significant. Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin out in Q1. P19 was Kevin Magnussen. P18, not a good weekend for the Alpines either. Esteban Ocon. P17, Pierre Gasly. Both Alpines out in Q1. P16 was Zhou Guanyu. Advancing through to Q2 in P15 was Logan Sargeant in the Williams. P14 was Valtteri Bottas. P13 was Nico Hülkenberg. P12, good showing. First full weekend, Liam Lawson. Hello, how you doing, sir? P11, Yuki Tsunoda. Also feeling the pressure, but looks like coming out on top, at least in qualifying. P10, making the Q3 shootout. Fernando Alonso. P9 was Lando Norris. P8 was Lewis Hamilton. P7 was Oscar Piastri. P6, Alex Albon and the other Williams, proving the pace set on Friday was real. P5, Sergio Checo Perez. P4, George Russell in the Mercedes. P3, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. P2, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. And in P1, with a lap time of 1:20.294, Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. Not who you think you were going to have on Saturday. Certainly not the Ferrari I would have thought if it was going to be one that knocked him off. But Chili Sainz, man, came to play on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. But Carlos Sainz is kind of proving me wrong. I never really thought he had what it took to go up against Charles Leclerc at Ferrari. But he's really doing really fantastic this year. And now he's got the pole. Got the podium from the race, which we'll get into later. But yeah, Ferrari must have really turned up those engines to 11 and said, you know, damn the torpedoes. We don't care if they explode. We need to put on a and they really did. It was very exciting to see someone who wasn't named Max Verstappen be on the pole. and bonus points for it being a Ferrari.
Yeah, I mean, talk about different philosophies. The Ferrari, absolutely mega in the straights. Clearly, in a straight line, that car, at least with that setup, that's what they went for. They just said, screw it. I think you're right. I think they turned the engine as far up as they could without it, and they were just going to basically let it blow. It's what I used to say, you know, when McLaren's used to struggle with Honda, that's what I wanted them to do. I'm like, I don't care if we only go 10 laps, but let's make it the 10 best freaking laps you could. And that seemed like the strategy with Ferrari, but it didn't blow up, certainly in qualifying. But Carlos Sainz, hell of a lap, to pip the great Max Verstappen this season. Good on Charles Leclerc being right there. And George Russell not that far off. I mean, the top five, you're only talking about 0.4 of a second over a pretty long course. So, it's a lot of straight lines, and there's not a ton of complexity to it, but lots of different philosophies yielding similar lap times. So interesting to see for sure. Cody, any other thoughts on qualifying before we move on to the race?
Let's see here. We got a pretty good showing from Liam Lawson, being less than 0.2 behind Yuki Tsunoda, despite only being on, as you said, his first full weekend of the year. So good on him for that. I imagine Daniel Ricciardo's got to be sweating just a little bit. I would say, even though he made it to Q2, relatively poor performance from Logan Sargeant. We saw how well Alex Albon qualified way up in sixth place, so it was a little disappointing to see Sargeant so far back, being down in P15. And then lastly, those Alpines, man, like, they went off the great feels of Pierre Gasly getting a podium, and then both cars were out in Q1, and they didn't have anything all weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you see the stretch of the calendar, and you can clearly tell, just based on these last two results, you know, who's dominant where, in what section of racing, or what's the philosophies of each team. And Alpine, clearly not in the straights, and clearly not here. And obviously couldn't do anything or get anything to recover that. One team we did see do some recovery based on the form in Spa to the form here was, I think, the McLaren team getting both cars into Q3, barely just. Lando just made it. But they did bring a new rear wing. It probably wasn't as, you know, curated as they would have wanted it to be. They had to do a lot of correlation early on the Friday running. You know, I went into this weekend with almost no expectation. And then they show up in pre-practice 2 and set P2 and P4. And I'm like, whoa, you know, maybe there's something here. And then Saturday morning happened and you saw really where they were. And, you know, that kind of brought me back down. So I was not expecting to get both cars into Q3. I was almost expecting one to get pipped there. But to get both cars into it, when we talk about the race results, at least they were raceable. So that was good. So positives, definitely Alex Albon proving that the Williams pace was good. You mentioned Liam Lawson. I think that was another positive. Hamilton and only P8. I thought that was a bit of a surprise that he was that far down there, given especially the pace of his teammate there. So, you know, that was kind of interesting.
He seems to be pretty hot and cold with qualifying this year. There's some where he's like right up there and, you know, like he got a pole, and then there's some where he's not even getting, didn't he miss out on Q3 at least once? So yeah, he's definitely kind of all over the place with qualifying.
Yeah, he started 13th at Zandvoort and, you know, raced his way back from there. So yeah, I mean, it's hit or miss, it seems, you know. And this is kind of also what I've been saying about this midfield is there's going to be certain teams at certain tracks that are going to look really good, and there's going to be certain teams at other tracks that don't look so good, and then that's going to flip-flop. And that's almost exactly what you saw. It's very interesting to watch. You know, you mentioned the Alpines. My gosh. Talk about, you know, the agony and the ecstasy at the same, or the ecstasy followed by the agony, but yikes, almighty. It's what I think these rules have been designed to do. They're doing, but for the Red Bull dominance. We will now flip the script and we will get over. We will start, we'll go lights out and we'll get into the race on Sunday. Unfortunately, not being able to even see the starting line, he did make it three quarters of the way around in the formation lap, I think, before the power unit said no more. That was Yuki Tsunoda in the AlphaTauri. He gets the DNS that did not start. The other non-classified finisher, I don't even remember watching him retire. I just know that he did. Esteban Ocon in the Alpine, probably to put it out of its misery around that track. P18, Kevin Magnussen in the Haas. P17, Nico Hülkenberg in the other Haas. The only team on the road that were lapped. Yikes, for a Ferrari-powered power unit. Apparently that one was not turned up all the way as the works team ones, because, yeah, something missing definitely there. P16, Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin. He was on the struggle bus all weekend. P15 was Pierre Gasly. Podium last week, not even out of our back markers this week, and that is on race pace and pure qualifying pace and just pace in general, just not with it this weekend. P14, Joe Grandjean in the Alfa Romeo. And P13, he's in the back markers. He probably deserved a better fate. He was so tantalizingly close to points late. Logan Sargeant in the Williams comes home with no points in P13. Cody, big thoughts on the back markers.
I felt bad for Yuki Tsunoda for not starting the race. I felt even bad for us for not getting a point for the P10. He was out before he even had a shot, and then it took a surprisingly long time to get his car off the track, and we had a little bit of a weird situation with getting the race even started.
Yeah,
I saw a lot of memes about how Nico Rosberg's curse took effect for the whole grid when he took a picture of himself with the grid, because he didn't even get the race started. Had that
when he's there, he does give some interesting insights. He's like cats. It's like scratches on a chalkboard. It's just something about him that just drives me crazy. But I can't fault for a lot of what he says. I think a lot of what he says is really spot on. Even though I don't particularly like how he delivers it. But that neither here nor there. The whole thing with the beginning of the race. So usually in that type of situation, if you have a car breakdown, they will send the cars around for an extra formation lap. That is known. It's something that happens a lot. It's done for two reasons. One, you can't add laps back because we don't have refueling. So because of that, you then send everybody around again. One, to keep the engines relatively cool. And two, because, yeah, if you kept them on the start grid, the brakes or something else is going to melt. So they sent him around again. And I don't know. He was by a marshal's post, but I couldn't figure out what they ended up having to get the crane and the flatbed to come pick him up. But it didn't end up happening within even the second formation lap. So instead of doing it yet again and taking another lap off the board, the FIA elects just to hold the cars there for this interminable amount of time. And meanwhile, the mechanics are all scrambling to get through what looks like this little tiny pinhole to get back onto the grid to try to service the cars. And what felt like 30 to 45 seconds of forever, I'm sure, to everybody involved, was just waiting for the FIA to say, okay, you can go back on the grid and actually touch the cars again. So we ended up with an official 5-minute delay. I think it actually turned out to be in real time something like 20 minutes, because I don't think we started until like 23 past the hour. Mm-hmm. So lots of confusion. Usually when we're talking about FIA confusion, it's stuff at the end of the race. This was in a dry condition, not even being able to get the race started. I'll talk a little bit more when we get to our awards, but what was your take on the whole delay and what'd you think?
It was really weird, and I can see needing the extra time to get the car off, because I think the commentators were guessing that the car was stuck in gear, so they couldn't really like roll Tsunoda past the post there, which is why they needed the crane. So I can see needing the extra time. What got to be a little weird was you had the car sitting on the grid, then all of a sudden you had all the mechanics like rushing to the end of the pit wall, getting ready to go around. You even had a couple climbing over the pit wall to try to get to the cars, and then they kind of stopped like, ooh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And they just sat there for like a good couple minutes before someone finally decided, okay, yes, go. We're going to do this. We're going to be sitting here for a few minutes. So a little bit of a delayed call there, I think. But yeah, it was odd, but I guess not surprising in today's world of Formula One.
Yeah, it's nothing if we don't get a little sprinkling of FIA confusion with another scenario that you'd think we would have figured out, you know, might happen, but just didn't. But anyway, it didn't seem to affect anybody. When the race actually started, it looked like everybody got off from the line okay. You know, there was a pretty much relatively clean. I mean, I don't think there was no virtual safety car. There was no safety car after that confusion. So they got all the laps in.
Ocon had the quietest retirement I've ever seen. The commentators didn't say anything about it. Like suddenly, like you get to the end of the race and you're like, oh, he's not.
Man, when did that happen? Like they didn't even show it. Like usually there's always the shot of the car going into the pits or the radio message, we have to retire the car. But that usually means that the action on the track is usually pretty good. And I think that was really probably more why we didn't see that. So moving on from the back markers in P12, we find Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. He probably deserved a better fate on the day, if I'm being quite honest. P11, Liam Lawson in the AlphaTauri representing. First full weekend in the car. That's a darn good result. P10, Valtteri Bottas in the Alfa Romeo. That's a significant point for that team. So come home in P10 and score a point. P9, a bit of a shocker here, especially given the upgrades brought to that car. Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin only managing P9. Aston Martin not necessarily showing all that great. P8, Lando Norris in the McLaren probably had a little bit better pace, but he could not get around. I would say was my, I'm just going to say it right now, my dark horse of the day, Alex Albon in the Williams, mega defending and making the one-stop strategy work, coming home in P7 for Williams. P6 was Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. P5 was George Russell in the other Mercedes. Bit of contrasting strategies. We'll have to talk about them in a little bit. And in P4, just missing out on the podium, despite some great attempts to get there, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. Yeah, lots to talk about in the midfield. Cody, what's your take?
Fantastic job for Alex Albon, getting really good points, finishing in seventh. Just like a bunch of weeks, you know, that we've had so far, been hoping that he was going to finish a little higher up. And he's there getting close to the end, but just can't keep it there and started to get passed by a few of the other drivers. So but P7 is still a perfectly respectable finish for him. My prediction of Fernando Alonso getting pole was very off the mark. And his race result pretty much reflected that. Only moved up one place to ninth, you know, pretty much all around. I guess he got points, so it wasn't a super stinker of a weekend, but definitely not the best showing from Aston Martin by any stretch. And then, your boy Lando scooping up a couple points for McLaren. At this point, after his, you know, a couple of podiums, it seems a little disappointing. However, you know, all we have to do is look back to the beginning of the season, and we can be really happy about McLaren scoring a few points.
Yeah, I mean, if you peg this on the calendar, at least according to everything that the team said, specifically, I mean, you look at you have the great result in Great Britain, you have the even better result, I think, in Hungary, which was, again, unexpected. And then you go to Spa, and for three quarters of that weekend, you looked like you were on it, but you were on it because of the weather. And then the team realized just how in a not good the car was in a straight line. Where that car makes up its time is in the high and some of the medium speed corners. And there was still a lot of endemic drag in the car. So they realized right after Spa, like, we got to go to work and we got to get stuff ready. Looking at this track, like I said, I came into it as a fan with little to no expectation. And the fact that they were still able to get points out of this, like, I was like, they were setting the stage. If you look at all the pre-race interviews, Zach Brown, Oscar Piastri, Lando Norris, everything they said was that they thought they were going to struggle mightily in race pace. And at least they were there. That also being said, these two tracks, Zandvoort and here, they were pegging, was not going to be what they thought was going to be really super mega coming out of the break. Also, now that having been said, I've already seen post stuff from Andre Estella saying the capper upgrade, that third and final big upgrade package, that's coming for Singapore. And they think they're going to go a lot better in Singapore. So we'll have to see if it happens. But at least from a fan perspective, I'm excited still to see what they're going to be able to do. And I'll take this for what it is.
The Verstappen streak stop at 10?
Wouldn't that be a story? The team that was nowhere comes up and stops the mighty Red Bull at the end. Yeah, that's one of those things like you could write, like, you can't write that. You're a Hollywood script writer. You can't write that in the middle of a season, man. You can't do that. They'd call you crazy. Part of me hopes it really freaking happens. But anyway, got to talk a little bit about Oscar Piastri, who was probably on for a points finish. Probably should have finished. If Lando finishes eighth, he could have at least finished P9. Did have contact with Lewis Hamilton, who was coming back through on a medium tire versus soft tires at the end. So Lewis had a little bit more pace in the car. Oscar was trying to fight him off going into, I think it's the Curva Grande, and they touch. Lewis actually was very stand up about it, went and apologized to Oscar for it. He did receive a 5-second penalty for it, but he was able to get it far enough in front of the McLarens and of Alex Albon to where the penalty did not hurt him. Interesting strategy call by Mercedes, starting him on the hard tire, which meant that he really didn't advance forward early, and then finishing it off on the medium, which was pretty much opposite of most who would start the race on the medium tire and then switch over to the hard. At least that was most of the one stoppers. So at least on strategy, they definitely got it right. And I think Lewis benefited because of it.
Yeah, pretty good recovery drive, making it all the way back up to sixth. Was never going to catch, I don't think, anyone beyond that, because it looks like George was about 20 seconds up the road from him. So he did about as well as he was going to do. That contact with Piastri looked pretty nasty when it happened. I thought they were both toast. It turned out it only really ruined one of their races. And, Hamilton got the 5-second penalty. It was deserved. It pretty much looked deserved from all of the replays. He just kind of squeezed Piastri a little too close to the edge of the track, and they bumped wheels, and Piastri's wing came out for the worst. But, like you said, stand-up guy admitted that, he was the one to take the blame there, and I'm sure they're going to be just fine and move on from it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Oscar's post-race sound. He basically said, look, what else could I ask for? The stewards gave him a penalty, and he came up and said it was my fault and wouldn't try to do that again. So I don't think there's hard feelings between them or anything like that. It basically amounts to really a big, giant racing incident at the end of the day, and that's pretty much kind of what it was. George Russell, I think, showing really good for Mercedes. But we got to talk about the dueling Scuderia Ferraris. Oh my, talk about some fun and some fun late going into that turn one chicane. Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc gave us some of the closest wheel-to-wheel action I think we've seen between the two since they've been on that team. And I'll tip my cap, man, all clean, very little to if any contact that I saw. And Carlos Sainz comes
really
out.
Really close, man.
Yeah, I know. They were pushing it. The number one rule in Formula One is you don't wreck your teammate, and they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Sainz really put up a great fight, and I was impressed that he was able to stave off Charles Leclerc there at the end of the race. It cracked me up that he was asking the team at the end, like, look, guys, let's just bring it home. Just let me keep my podium, please. And Ferrari must have been sitting there in their strategy box going, you know what? The Tifosi are here. They're enjoying the show. Let's just let them have it. They'll get some excitement. You guys will sort it out. And, incredibly close wheel-to-wheel action on the track. By far the most exciting part of the race, so watching them duel for that podium at the end. You could tell that they were both really hungry for it. Carlos Sainz gets his first of the year. Very impressed with this drive, and put on a great show for everyone there at Monza.
All right, so I have to ask, if you put your Tifosi hat on for a minute, were you impressed by that, or was it absolutely stomach churning, and you just would have wished that they would have picked one and gone with it, because I could see arguments for both. Like, as a neutral, yeah, I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But if I was pulling, and if they had contacted each other and taken each other out, oh my God, the fallout.
I guess, yeah, it's a little different if you are a diehard Ferrari fan who just wants them to get really good points and take that podium. I guess it kind of depends whose camp you're in, too. If you're, you know, a Charles fan, you want him to get the podium. If you're a Carlos fan, you want him to get the podium. So I would say, talking for a moment as a Ferrari fan, I thought it was very exciting anyway. And if they ended up wrecking each other, they ended up wrecking each other. But it just showed that they're both very passionate drivers. And I think that reflects really well on Ferrari.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely stepped up this weekend. I don't know. I can't figure if that's going to be where they're going to be for the rest of the season. I think, like you said, I think they turned that engine up and they just kind of said, if it blows up, it blows up. And I think that was kind of the attitude was, you know, it's kind of almost a NASCAR attitude of checkers or wreckers. You know, it just kind of seemed that was the philosophy from jump. And maybe that's Fred Vasseur, you know, coming in, and maybe that's a new philosophy that you're not necessarily used to seeing. But at least here, the gamble pays off. They get two cars up in the points. They were definitely the best of the rest all weekend. You know, sans Red Bull, they were the best, and they even held the lead those amazing 15 laps. And it kind of comes down to what I've been saying about these other teams with Red Bull. They can stick with them for a while, but it's just over the course of a stint that Red Bull is so nice on its tires. So let's just go ahead and reveal. The podium was Carlos Sainz. Second place, Sergio Checo Perez, coming back from P5 to take the make it a Red Bull 1-2. And in P1, Max Verstappen, 10 in a row for the Red Bull racer. Wow. This was what we thought was going to be probably one of their toughest tests. And basically 11 seconds to the good amongst until the next team. Looks like they came out with flying colors.
It did look like, though, that they were going to struggle there for a little while, because, as you said in the beginning, it had 15 laps of thinking maybe it might not happen. Max was staying right on Carlos's tail, but was having a bit of a hard time getting around him. And for that matter, so was Sergio Perez. He had to overtake George Russell, Charles Leclerc, and Carlos Sainz. And to his credit, he did get it done by the end of the race. But those were some really difficult overtakes. There were several times where he locked up, especially trying to fight, George Russell, trying to get to a good point where he could use that inside line going into the first turn, and just couldn't do it. Couldn't get far enough up and in position. Went off the track and missed that turn a couple times, but eventually was able to get the job done. Those Red Bulls really did come through at the end, like I said, Max had similar struggles with Carlos Sainz, but once he finally got past him, he just waited for Carlos to make one little mistake, one little lockup, and then from there it was pretty much all over.
Yeah, I mean, you could even almost hear for the first time, I don't know that we've heard this really all season, the bit of exasperation in Max's voice when it wasn't an easy, you know, oh, now I have the DRS. Let me just hit this little button here and zoop and bye. It wasn't happening. And he was trying to, maybe the Red Bull strategy box was getting more interesting. And were they destined to have to try an undercut to try to get by? And as it turns out, you know, it didn't really matter in the end, just because over the course of that stint, that Red Bull is so much nicer on its tires. They are the Pirelli whisperers this season, between both of them. Both Perez and Verstappen just are able to eke out more out of that life of that rubber than anybody else. And it showed here today, if it didn't show anywhere else. Even though Ferrari had basically pushed all their chips in, I admire the attempt. I really do admire the attempt. That's what I've been wanting to see was, you know, hey, you know, if they either make it or they don't. And, you know, they still come home with a podium. And I thought overall, for a 73 minute of actual racing, we got a really good show, I think, up and down the grid with considering no weather and considering just the battles that were going on up and down the grid. Yeah, I thought this was very an entertaining race. So I leave this as a F1 big picture fan, pretty satisfied and happy that I got up early, even though I was a little hungover to watch it.
Yeah, you and me both. Yeah, that race just flew by. Like, you know, my fiance was getting up to go to like the flea market with her parents, and she comes down. She's like, "Oh, how's the race going? It's over. It's already done."
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the 20-some minute delay at the start, it would have been like 9:15 in the morning by the time it would have been done and dusted. But you know, it was at least efficient, if nothing else. All right, so we will leave the Italian GP here. We will take our official break. We'll come back. We'll pay a couple bills. We'll come back. We'll recap the driver and the team standings. I think Red Bull are still doing really well. But anyway, we'll break all of that down. We'll get into our favorite segment, the fan email segment. We'll throw it over to you, get your takes on what you saw this weekend, and then we'll get into our awards, look at some predictions. There is a streak that was broken. We'll have to find out, but you got to come back to find out what happened. So come on back and we'll get into all that.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back. This is season 5. This is episode number 28 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's the 2023 Italian GP race review. Welcome along, and you've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight, and we have broken down the very entertaining, very fun, but quick and super efficient Italian GP. And now we're going to get into where all the standings shake out after this round. So, Cody, if you do the drivers, I will do the teams.
Sounds great. Your driver standings as of the 2023 Italian Grand Prix. Max Verstappen, P1 in the last 10 races. Outstanding drives. He has nailed in that first position and probably will stay there all season. He sits atop with 364 points now. Second place is Sergio Perez, his teammate, at 219 points. Fernando Alonso still holding on to that third place for the time being for Aston Martin with 170 points. But catching up to him quickly is Lewis Hamilton for Mercedes, P4 with 164 points. Carlos Sainz, the top of the two Ferraris, he scores the podium this weekend and gets big points. He's in P5 with 117 points. Just behind him is teammate Charles Leclerc, who got the P4 this weekend. He is a P6 in points with 111 points. P7 goes to George Russell for Mercedes at 109 points. And then a little bit of a gap down to P8. That's Lando Norris for McLaren, doing much better than we all thought they would be doing at the beginning of the year. He has 79 points. P9, somehow, Lance Stroll with Aston Martin with 47 points. And in P10, also somehow, Pierre Gasly with Alpine at 37 points.
Yeah, interesting. The last three positions, the last two positions, no points amongst in this weekend, yet they maintain their positions in the top 10 and the drivers. But switching over to the teams, big shocker here, Red Bull Racing Powertrains. And I think at the end of this year, we're going to look at their point total and say how many points they didn't score. My gosh, 583 points. In P2, Mercedes check in. They have now gotten some distance on that and look to be solidifying that position. 273 points for them. P3, Ferrari up to P3 is Ferrari with 228. Slipping back to P4 is Aston Martin on 217, the early darlings falling back a little bit. In fifth place, looks like that's probably where they're going to finish unless they score a ton in the remaining rounds. That would be McLaren Mercedes. They check in with 115 points. P6, Alpine check in with 73 points. P7, on the strength of Alex Albon, Williams Mercedes, they check in with 21 points. That looks like that P7 battle looks to be pretty much solidified. Unless Haas Ferrari can fight back in the remaining rounds, they check in P8 with 11 points. P9, that point for Valtteri Bottas was very significant because that moves them within one of P8. So that's some prize money at stake here. So Alfa Romeo, they check in with 10 points. And in P10, Despite the good showings of Liam Lawson, the unfortunate result for Yuki Tsunoda takes them out of point contention, and they remain on 3 points.
You know, I gotta wonder if we're gonna get to a point this year where Red Bull is gonna have more points than the next three teams combined. That would be something.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, I know. I do think you can basically look at, like I said, what is in play now is you can look at maximum point total when you know, across the board and across the sprints, you can add them up and basically say, how many points did Red Bull not get this season? Because I think that's actually in play. If it doesn't change very, very quickly, and there's no indication that it's going to. Yikes. Places, again, completely uncharted territory. I mean, we've seen Mercedes pile up some mega point totals throughout the course of the season, but, you know, we do have more races than we've had before and more opportunities to score points. But this point total, in terms of accounting stat, I don't think you're going to see this get touched again. Nope. Hardly, if ever again.
Maybe it will be next year.
That would prove me wrong. You can rewind this thing back. I'll save it. I know. All right, I got the timestamp. We'll rewind this back next year, and you know, when Red Bull checks in after this round with 585 points, and you can all laugh at me there.
Gotten 10 consecutive 1-2s.
Oh, good Lord. That being said, I've said it many times before. I mean, you gotta respect what's going on here. I mean, this is, like I said, this is complete uncharted territory. But God, I still want somebody to step up and beat him. And it's gonna take something like Ferrari did this weekend. It's gonna take a team that just says, you know what, this is gonna be our best shot. We're just gonna throw it down. We're gonna turn that engine way up. And if it blows up, it blows up. And, you know, if not, then at least we try to come home. So that's what it's going to take this weekend, is somebody just taking a shot in the dark and seeing what happens. But enough of our takes on the Italian GP weekend. It's time for your takes on the Italian GP weekend. It's our favorite segment, the fan email segment. We've got a couple, three contributors this weekend. So, Cody, it is your time to shine, and let's hear from the fans.
All right, our first fan email comes from Rachel Fleming, a regular contributor to our show. Thank you, Rachel. And she says, Thanos wins again. No stopping him now. Not even the Monza curse. Well, barring the fiasco at the start, it was an okay race. But those five-second penalties did absolutely nothing, especially Hamilton's penalty. Not impressed with that move from him. But no matter who your dad is, Aston Martin must at least have a conversation about Lance, probably boasting on Twitter about undercutting Ocon for 17th, really does sum it up, doesn't it? I was not aware of that myself. That does sound a little goofy, especially since Ocon didn't finish the race. I gotta assume he was being a little sarcastic about that one. We did apparently hear from him recently that the whole tennis thing is a big joke. He's not going anywhere. Oh, darn. Got to deal with him for the foreseeable future, kind of taking up that seat over at Aston Martin. As far as the Thanos thing, yes, Max is Thanos. That meme becomes just more and more relevant as time goes on. And hopefully we're not going to be sitting here 8 races time being like, he can't possibly make it to 20 in a row starting next year, could he?
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, that would just be totally nuts, and I honestly probably would stop getting exciting by then.
Well, I mean, it's amazing that it happens, and it's amazing that it happens in this era, a hybrid era, with engines as complicated as they are, and we did see a Honda go poof, you know, this weekend. So it's not like they don't go poof. They do. But it's an amazing, from the unreliability we had when this formula first started in 2014, to 9 years in, these engines, whether you like them, you hate them, whatever your thoughts on them, they run well, and they run for a long time, which is kind of an amazing achievement considering just how much knowledge, you know, you want to dog on these engines, fine. I mean, I'm one that dogs on these engines a lot on the show. I don't particularly care for them, and I think they're too complicated. But the fact that we've gotten to the point where you can change an engine out between free practice three and qualifying, and the team's hardly bat an eye about it. And the fact that you've gotten done this, Max Verstappen, 10 out of 10, hardly a reliability anything anywhere that I've seen. It's one, an engineering feat, and two, a driving feat, and you tip your cap. I mean, I don't know what else you can say about it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, with the engine freeze that's in play right now, really the only upgrades that teams can make to their engine legally is with regards to reliability. So I got to imagine teams are sinking a little bit of money into these engines to make them as reliable as possible. And we are really seeing the fruits of that, because all things considered, really haven't had that many retirements throughout the year due to equipment failures.
Well, and the other part of that, and there is the show suffers a little bit because of that, because I do think the Friday running becomes a lot more irrelevant the less you see. You used to be able, maybe 10, 12 years ago, look at like FP2 at the end of that Friday and go, okay, these are the teams that should do good, and these are the teams that don't do so well. You look at the standings here for FP2, and again, I'll just use McLaren as an example. They look mega. They look mega. All the data said they look pretty good. You had Norris on the, dominance tracker graphic and all that other good stuff. And then flip over to Saturday when all the engines get turned to where they really were. And now they're not so good. And now they're a little bit more draggy. And now they don't show quite so well. So, I mean, you just look at that. And that's common now. So you have to take that Friday running. And I always say it all the time. You just take it with a grain of salt until you – I don't make up my mind now until Saturday morning and what's my expectations are for qualifying, because you can't. So, I mean, we're going to go to a race. Now for us, fortunately, it's going to be a sprint weekend. So the Friday becomes relevant, and maybe that's where they ultimately want this to go, is they just, take that element out of it. But with all this reliability, it does hurt the show a little bit, because the Friday running, everybody's using an older engine, and everybody, I think, other than Ferrari this weekend, had them turned down. Way very much so. But with respect to Lance, and you and I were talking about this, we were dogging him earlier. He's still P9 in the drivers, which is not completely unrespectable, but you look at the last few races, how is that working out? But I guess just good enough to stay in the seat. Anyway.
Yeah. P9 when your teammate is P3. It's not a good look, even if it is Fernando Alonso.
Well, at some point, and it's probably not going to matter this year, and I think Aston Martin, if you had told them at the start of this season they were going to be solidly P4 with a 102-point lead after the Monza round of the championship, I think they would have taken that, and they would have said, yep, we're good. Thanks. We're out.
Moving on to our next fan email. This one comes from Ficus Sharma, and they say, it was a good race, action all around. Just wanted to report on the last lap of the race. I went to vote for the driver of the day, and to my surprise, it said I'd already voted for Sainz. So either I have amnesia, or my account was hacked, so I don't know how genuine the 31% vote was. Sorry to say that, you might have got hacked. Maybe the Tifosi were out trying to make sure that was going to be sealed in for driver of the day. But honestly, with how Carlos Sainz tore it up and defended that P3 from Charles Leclerc, defended really pretty much from everybody throughout the race, I would say it's probably pretty genuine. You'll see what my driver of the day was later, but Carlos Sainz is perfectly respectable choice.
Yeah, I can't comment on how well or how poorly they tally that thing. It's a tough ask to be doing it in the middle of the race. They close the vote off with, I think, a couple laps to go. And sometimes I think if you had voted for somebody before, it might come through again. I'm not an IT. I don't know exactly what the issue was. I'm sorry if you did have an issue there. You should be able to vote how you'd like to vote. And if it already tallied you from something that you did 8-9 races ago, then I'm sure that they will work to fix it. Usually whenever they have some sort of a tech glitch, they do try to work it. It's definitely a lot better than when they first started doing it. The thing would crash all the time. It's much better now than what it was then. So that's kind of all I know about that.
All right. And then our last fan email comes in from Dave Doherty, who says, man, Ferrari gave us a show on them for the last 15 laps. That was exactly what we wanted. Someone who could make Max's race a challenge right now. Seems like that's about the best we can hope for is people just being a little bit of a nuisance to Max on his road to imminent victory. But I do got to say, it was exciting. Sainz stayed out in front a lot longer than I was expecting him to. I honestly was thinking Max was just going to blow by the first lap, and that was going to be over and done with. But you know, I really think it's got a lot to do with that that the Red Bulls' dominance in the race, you know, other than being able to make the tires last forever, is the strength of that DRS. And when you're at Monza, that rear wing is so small and so flat because of the lesser need for downforce that I don't really think you get that much of an advantage from the DRS. It opens up and it gives you a little bit of an advantage, but it's not as like stark a difference as when that car is in high downforce configuration. And I think that really played a part in how long it was taking Verstappen and Perez to make it around the cars in front of them. We did see him struggle a little bit, but I don't think it really gets much lower downforce than Monza. So we're probably going to go back to seeing the Red Bull rocket ship in the coming races.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what they said. I know they said here at Monza the DRS was only really good for about another 7 kph down the straight versus other circuits where it tends to be around 15 to maybe 20 additional kph down wherever that zone is. So it's really only good or maybe about a third or maybe half of what it can be. And I'm trying to remember what they said in Saudi Arabia where it was just massive. The Red Bull, and that's where they coined the term the super duper DRS, was I thought it was something like 25, 30 kph at that track, which was just insanity. I might be wrong on that.
It makes me think of that scene from Men in Black where the car rocket starts and they just like launch back in the seat.
Yeah, remember the little red button I told you not to push? Yeah, go ahead and push the little red button. And then Elvis comes on and there goes Max. Like, That's the secret. We've uncovered it. But anyway, I think you're right. Like I said it earlier, I mean, for those 15 laps, we really didn't know what was going to happen. And that's probably the closest we've been. Like I said, I did a collective. As soon as I saw it on timing, I'm like, I saw him getting close. And I'm like, come on, Carlos, just get to the pit stop. If you could just get to the stop. And nope. But like I said, overall, I think this was a very entertaining show. And like I said, I left as a fan satisfied from it. Max had to earn it. It's all you can ask for on the day today. All right. Thank you to all of our contributors. We appreciate all of your inputs into our show, and we appreciate reacting to it. All right. So we will now transition into our awards. We will start, as we are apt to do, with the Rubbish Award. Cody, I like where you're going. What you got?
My Rubbish Award this week goes to Alpine. First time since they've been Alpine that neither driver made it out of Q1. And not only that, neither driver scored points. We had Ocon retire from the race, probably just to take that car out back and put it out of its misery. And yeah, just pretty awful showing coming from them, especially after riding the high of Pierre Gasly getting a very unexpected podium. I'm really hoping for their sake it's just the characteristics of Monza being kind of a unique, very low downforce, high speed track that just doesn't play into their car very well. And hoping that they're going to be more competitive in the races going forward.
Yeah, I suspect they're going to be, but yeah, here it was not good. there's no way to put sugar on this. They were bad, and I think they would admit that they were bad. And I'm pretty sure that's probably why they retired Ocon, because it was like, we could just keep riding around being bad, or we can stop. And let's just go ahead and stop. I think that is a more than good qualifying choice there, probably from the team's perspective. But my rubbish goes out to, like, man, we seriously can't clear a stricken race car with at least one extra formation lap. I mean, one, either that formation lap was too fast, or something weird happened there. And it may look, I don't want to dog the marshals. I know they do the best they can. It was hot. It's an unexpected situation. If the car wouldn't go into gear, there's really nothing you could do. But when that's happening, shouldn't there be a marshal on the radio back to the team, back to the FIA going, look, we're not going to be able to clear this. You got to come up with the next plan. And we saw a bit of freeze again from the FIA there, where it's like, well, what are we going to do? Do we do it another? Do we do another formation? What should we do? What, I don't really know what's going on here. So we're going to sit and let the cars melt on the grid. And okay, now you can go do it.
There does seem to be a disturbing lack of communication between the FIA and the teams and drivers in situations like this, where, you know, they're trying to come to a decision and they're not even telling anyone, like, hey, yeah, we're working on it. We'll let you know in a minute. It just seems to be silence. And as you said earlier in the show, the teams are just left there to be like, we think this is going to happen. We think they're going to just keep you on the grid and we're going to go out there and, you know, have a delayed start, but we don't really know because no one's telling us anything.
Yeah. And, you know, it is one of those instances. And look, I mean, sometimes I will be a critic of Formula E, but one of the things they do is they just put the race director on the microphone and you hear pretty much everything that gets told to the teams. And it's a lot more transparent and it's a lot better. Good, bad, or indifferent. And I know we've had the whole team radio to the FIA thing, and we saw the nightmare that created. And I understand why they want to have a bit of a black box for those types of things. Mm-hmm. But if you tell the teams you can't go complaining about the rules and it's just a race announcement, I mean, WEC does it. Nobody seems to have a problem with it. Formula E does it. Those are both FIA accredited series and nobody seems to have a problem with it. So if you just heard what was actually being said, maybe there was a communication and we just didn't hear it. And you know, maybe he was saying, hey, look, we think we're going to clear it. We're just going to let it be for a minute. And maybe that makes it all seem a lot more reasonable as to what actually happened. But when you don't have it and you have that kind of black box of mystery, you're left to speculate. And you just, you know, unfortunately, they just come out and look stupid, you know, for good or bad.
Yeah. After 2021, though, FIA is probably like transparency bad. No more.
No seeing through the looking glass here. There's nothing to see here. Nothing to see. Whatever do you mean? But anyway, don't want to go down that rabbit hole. That's a whole different rabbit hole. We're not going to go down there. All right. We'll move on to our analysis paralysis. And because I like to pick on the FIA, I'll go first here. And I'll just say, for the mass confusion at the start, why is this not understood as to what's going to happen and when? You'd think, you know, you read the FIA rule book, you read the sporting regs, and it literally starts with, we're having a race, and it's this distance. And you literally, the regs read like you're building a puzzle, and you have a fully functioning race at the end of it. Why can this not be part of that puzzle? I don't understand. Anyway, it was just, again, confusing as a fan. And like I said, from a sporting perspective, nothing bad happened. It didn't affect anybody negatively. I'm glad that was the case. So I can't say that they got it wrong, and I can't really complain with the decision. I just wish we would have known what was happening. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. My analysis paralysis for the day is kind of in the same line as where we're going here with the FIA and the start of the race, but mine was goes specifically to the weirdness of the pit crews who were starting to climb over the wall before they seemingly had any kind of go ahead to go out there and tend to the cars that were sitting there on the starting grid. You had all of the crews pretty much bunched up by the wall. A few climbed over, and even the commentators were kind of saying, like, oh, I don't really know if you should have done that. I'm not really sure you're allowed to do that. It seems like no one's told you can go over there yet. So they looked a little goofy and kind of like they had egg on their face because suddenly they're sitting there on the other side of the pit wall being like, what do we do? So I'm gonna give analysis paralysis to those particular pit crews.
Yeah, I mean, it could have ended up, there could have been some big penalties handed out. I mean, could you imagine if, like, all of a sudden it comes back and you just see Alex or you see Tsunoda's car already in the pit lane, and now the cars are there, and the, you know, the four lights start to come up, and there's people on the grid, and then they would have had to abort that. They were definitely going to abort that start. There's no way that start was going to happen on the second formation lap. Good, better, indifferent there, but you know, it could have been a huge farce, could have been some massive sporting implications. Like I said, it's a good thing for everybody that there weren't. I'm probably making bigger a mountain out of this molehill, but you know, it's just, we shouldn't have to have the confusion. That's all I'm saying about that. But yeah, I get your point there. All right. So we will move on to our dark horse of the day. And I will do a tip of my cap, sir, to one Alex Albon for keeping my boy Lando Norris behind him, even though Lando was probably a tick or two, maybe faster in certain parts of the track. But Albon, who made the tires last, comes home. Best finish of the season for him, P7, making that Williams look really good. We thought they would go good here, and he proved it.
Yep, I am 100% in agreement with you. I wasn't really sure at first if I felt like calling Albon the dark horse, because everyone's been ramping up to this weekend saying, oh my God, the Williams is going to have a shot. It's going to be a rocket ship. It's their kind of track. And so, you know, I wasn't really sure we could give it to him based on all the hype, but he is clearly the best candidate for the award. Made the Williams look great, just like we were all expecting. Got that P7, one of his best finishes of the year. And yeah, I think can't really say much more about it than that.
Yeah, good on you, Alex Albon. Good on you, Williams. You were the darlings of the Italian GP. All right, we will move on to the driver of the day. And I'm going to go first on this one. And I know Max won, and it's easy enough just to say, hey, 10 out of 10, that's a huge accomplishment. And it is. But I'm going to give this one to Carlos Sainz because, number one, I like him. I miss him at McLaren sometimes. I love the Lando Carlos Sainz thing when they were together. And two, he was robbed literally post-race, and he and some intrepid Ferrari staff apparently chased down the people who robbed him and got him arrested. And I don't care who you are. It's either really stupid if they were like armed, but I'm going to say that's badass. So I'm giving my driver of the day to Carlos Sainz. He got his watch back, by the way. So don't go messing with the smooth operator. That dude literally like boxes. Like he does a boxing match as part of his training when he's getting amped up to get in the car. So he knows how to fight if you fight him, man. Stay away from that guy. Just let him be. He's good.
Yeah. Don't mess with Carlos. Yeah, that whole thing about that it got robbed, I didn't hear anything about it other than, like, he got robbed. And I'm like, oh, no, that's awful. And then you're telling me about how, like, no, they got arrested. They chased him down. It's like, oh, yeah, they got exactly what they deserved. But anyway, my driver of the day is going to go to Max Verstappen. The meme of Max is inevitable just keeps getting better with age. That I, for one, hope he pushes out this record streak to a point where no one will ever break it. And honestly, probably someday it will be broken. Someone will win all 29 races in a season or whatever we got by that point. But his consistency is just incredible. And pretty much, I think, until he stops winning races, he's going to keep getting driver of the day for me, unless he gets someone do something nuts like go from P20 to P2.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real simple formula for him. Like, here's the standard. Come fight me here. Ferrari did it for 15 laps. And then once they fell off, it was still here. Come find me here. And nobody else could. So, and this was the one. This was the one track that the 1988 McLaren team couldn't solve. Was Ferrari and the Tifosi at Monza. They were the Red Bull team this season were able to solve Ferrari and the Tifosi at Monza. So good on them for that. All right. So we've talked a lot about streaks. We do have one streak that has been dethroned, or it's over. And finally, after I think 6 tries at it, I think I finally beat you in the predictions game. I scored a whopping 4 points. I got the pole sitter. We got the quali lap time, P1 on the podium, and the race fastest lap time by going slower in both instances. You got 2 points. You got P1 and P2 on the podium. You almost had Lance Stroll come back for P15, but he missed it just that little bit. You're still ahead of me in the overall standings. I'm not even tallying that because you are definitely still the ace predictor of the show this season, but at least I get a little bit of light shown on me this weekend. So yeah, we will be back again. We'll try it again in Singapore, and maybe I can make it two in a row. We'll have to see. But yeah, I know you're going to bring it.
I started to see the writing on the wall when Alonso was not anywhere close to pole and that you got the pole time. And I was like, oh man, this isn't going to be good. I was thinking maybe I had a shot when Perez got back up to P2. If I could get the lap time, but nope, was not meant to be.
Yeah, interesting enough, we hadn't even mentioned it. It was Oscar Piastri. After he got the wing change, they put him on new tires. He's the one that went out and set the fastest lap time. Did not get a point because he finished outside the points. And then he and Lawson actually had a collision. We didn't talk about that, you know, either. Cost Piastri a 5-second penalty. So really? Drops him down.
I did not even know that
in
happened.
The standings. Yeah, no, it was one of those. And an odd thing happened at the end of the race. The timing screen actually froze for like 4 minutes on the last lap. So like we got to sector one and the first couple mini sectors lit up and then it just stopped. And then it didn't refresh until after the race ended. Then all the penalties came through. So all of a sudden you see this jumbling up of what you thought the order was. It was making it interesting, to say the least, trying to tweet it out the result. And I'm like, oh, wait, that's not what it is. Let me change it. Let me change it again. But anyway, first world problems, as I like to say sometimes. But all right. So that will do it for our Italian GP race review. If you stuck with us so long, thank you very much. We appreciate you doing that. Cody, any final thoughts as we leave the European season behind? It's flyaways now to the end of the season. And Singapore, the F1 night race looms. That's always a fun time. Usually a long race where Monza's the quick one. This one will probably run all the way to time. So what's your thoughts as we move forward?
Yeah, it cracked me up last year when you told me that Singapore almost never gets done before the allotted time for the race. And lo and behold, it went right up to the time last year. I really think Singapore is a fun race. It seems to be a bit of a chaotic one. Also seems to have potential for some weather there. So I'm really looking forward to it, even though the master of Singapore, my man Vettel, is no longer racing.
Yeah, I mean, the F1 cars under the lights always look really, really cool. Singapore as a venue is, I think, really, really cool. I hope the track races always a little bit better. But, if I think you're going to see the pendulum swing back to the teams that weren't as great in a straight line. I think you'll see Aston Martin do well. That's one that I can definitely pick who I think will actually run better. I'm praying to God that McLaren does better there than other places. And we'll see kind of how that goes. So lots of things to follow. Lots of stories to between now and then. There's always been, we talked about, we had some news break. If anything else does happen, keep us attuned on social media, particularly Twitter. I'll do my best to keep everybody updated as I see them. So for Cody, for everybody connected to the show, it's been Andy. This is always fun to do. We'll see you in a couple weeks for our Singapore preview. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.